The following program is made possible by WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio. To financially support the mission of WSFI, mail your tax-deductible donation to P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois, 60048. That is P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois, 60048. Or you may donate online at WSFIradio.org. Now, for a special presentation, Why Hope? By Father Joseph Mary Wolfe, the chaplain of the Eternal Word Television Network, recorded as part of the St. Raphael the Archangel Parish Mission in Old Mill Creek, Illinois. Here is Father Wolfe.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Peter approached Jesus and asked him, "Lord, if my brother sins against me, how often must I forgive him? As many as seven times?" Jesus answered, "I say to you, not seven times, but 77 times. That is why the kingdom of heaven may be likened to a king who decided to settle accounts with his servants. When he began the accounting, a debtor was brought before him who owed him a huge amount. Since he had no way of paying it back, his master ordered him to be sold, along with his wife, his children, and all his property in payment of the debt. At that, the servant fell down, did him homage, and said, 'Be patient with me, and I will pay you back in full.' Moved with compassion, the master of that servant let him go and forgave him the loan. When that servant had left, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him a much smaller amount. He seized him and started to choke him, demanding, 'Pay back what you owe.' Falling to his knees, his fellow servant begged him, 'Be patient with me, and I will pay you back.' But he refused. Instead, he had him put in prison until he paid back the debt. Now, when his fellow servants saw what had happened, they were deeply disturbed and went to their master and reported the whole affair. His master summoned him and said to him, 'You wicked servant, I forgave you your entire debt because you begged me to. Should you not have had pity on your fellow servant as I had pity on you?' Then in anger, his master handed him over to the torturers until he should pay back the whole debt. So will my heavenly Father do to you, unless each of you forgives your brother from your heart." The Gospel of the Lord. Last night, we asked the question, why believe? And tonight, we ask the question, why hope? And I especially want to talk about suffering, an element of all of our lives. How do we find meaning in our suffering, even joy and hope in the midst of our sufferings? You know, one of the sufferings that we endure is as we get older, a lot of times we start to have to let go of a lot of the things that we enjoyed, the strength and vigor of our youth. Maybe grandma and grandpa get their keys taken away from them, or those sorts of things. And I remember when Bob Hope, some of you remember the comedian Bob Hope, when he was asked after he turned 100, he was asked, well, how does it feel to be 100? And he replied, I don't feel anything until about noon. And then it's time for my nap. So it's part of learning to let go of our lives, to surrender them to God. And as we get older, we say, he must increase and I must decrease. Alice von Hildebrand, who's now in her 90s, she said to me one time at the friary, she said, Father Joseph, we're getting older. We're getting older on the outside, but younger on the inside. I've never forgot that. Because for the believer, that's true. Our bodies are wasting away, as St. Paul says, as we get older. You young children and young people don't yet know these things, but as you get older, you start to experience different things and challenges. You get on a first name basis with your doctor, you know. So she said, we're getting older on the outside, but we're getting younger on the inside. Because we're growing in the freedom of the children of God as we get older. If we're growing in our relationship with the Lord, we experience a greater freedom. We experience a greater intimacy with the Lord. We experience a greater capacity to love and to forgive. I remember when I was a young seminarian, I think this Redemptorist priest thought that I was a little bit too serious. And so he said to me, he said, remember, at that time, Brother Joseph, that humor and humility have the same Latin root, humus, meaning dirt or lowliness. Humor and humility have the same Latin root. And Father Angelus, who was with us for a number of years, he used to say that humor is the shock absorber of our lives, the shock absorber. So we have lots of jolts and shocks and disappointments in life. But the sense of humor kind of puts it in perspective. It puts it in perspective that although we live sometimes a troubled life, the end of the story is glory. And so we can take things a little bit more lightly. You know, it's said, there is no humor in hell. Or that atheists don't have a sense of humor because they have to take this life utterly seriously. It's all that they have. But those who are believers, as G.K. Chesterton said, the angels can fly higher because they take themselves lightly. And that if we can look at life a little more lightly, you know, to accept the fact that, yes, it is many times a valley of tears, and we experience that. And yet the spark of eternity is alive in us now. That joy is the gigantic secret of the Christian. It's a spark of eternity already alive in us that enables us to have joy even in the troubles of life. You know, the author Sheldon Vonnegut, he and his wife were both atheists, and they went to study at Oxford in England. And it was while they were there, and they were trying to create this perfect romantic love on earth. And that was going to be the goal, nothing to interfere with this love, to always keep that maintained. And a lot of that, they had some good ideas about how to do just that. But there was also something very lacking in that, because one of the things that they vowed then was that We're not going to have any children because they might bring division into this perfect romantic love that we have. They weren't believers. But at Oxford, they encountered a number of Christians that became friends. They knew a Benedictine monk, they knew a Protestant minister, and other Christians. And they saw that there was something these Christians had that they didn't have. As wonderful as their natural human love was for each other, it wasn't all that they were wanting. And they saw that these Christians had something more, and they were attracted to that. And they could see that although their friends who were atheists, if they had some trouble in their life, they were just totally desolate. But the Christians, they said they had this, what they called, quiet joy. Even in their troubles, they had this quiet joy, this hope that was still alive in them. Pope Benedict said, and you know that he wrote an encyclical on hope. Commenting on that, he said, it's important for the Christian to always remember that even if he or she loses everything, family, friends, finances, health, even if they lose everything, they still have hope. They still have hope because our hope is not limited to this life. Our hope is knowing that the end of the story is glory. Jesus went to his cross, but that was not the end of the story. The end of the story is glory. He rose again and he ascended into heaven. He brought our humanity into heaven because we are to share in that glory. We who have been baptized into his death will come to a like resurrection and share in his glory. He is the first fruits of many. So he desires that all be saved, come to the knowledge of the truth. That's why we always have hope, no matter what. That's why St. Maximilian Maria Kolbe could have hope in a concentration camp. Why he could sing hymns in the starvation bunker to Our Lady. Because hope can't be extinguished in the Christian. That spark of eternity is always alive in the Christian, in the believer. Now, I wanted to talk today, especially about suffering in our life, and to begin by talking about what are illegitimate sufferings. Sufferings we don't have to suffer, but often we choose to suffer them. It's foolish, but that's what we sometimes do, these things. So today's gospel, Jesus speaks about the necessity of forgiveness. And what he's pointing out here is, look, you have all been forgiven a huge amount that you could never repay, ever. But you've been forgiven. And however badly you may have been offended or hurt in your life, it's minuscule compared to that. And it doesn't mean that we may not feel the hurt. We're human beings. We have emotions. We can remember something that was done to us, and all of a sudden these feelings, these emotions come up. There's no sin there. That's part of our human reaction to something, some trauma, some hurt in our life. Where sin comes in is if we keep replaying that, and maybe exaggerating a little bit and stewing on it and cultivating revengeful feelings. That's where sin comes in. But the actual feeling, the response we may have, a reaction we have, is not the sin. In fact, it's an opportunity then to choose virtue. I always say that temptation is an invitation to sin, but it's also an opportunity for virtue. So a Christian is one who always takes something bad and turns it into something good. Overcome evil with good, St. Paul wrote. Never return evil for evil. So, for example, if someone hurt us in our past and that feeling comes up, that memory, we're going to intercede for them. God, give them the graces that they need in their lives. Help them to have a change of heart. And help me to love them like Jesus loved them. And I often say in the confessional, to people who are struggling with some deep hurt from the past, struggling to forgive, to let go, I will tell them and give them as a penance, look at the crucifix and remember the first words of Jesus, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. And if we do that, something of his ability to forgive, his power to love even those who hurt him, something of that comes into our own hearts. And we find it easier to let go of that and to intercede for them, taking the evil that was done to us and turning it into intercession for that very person that may have wounded us, hurt us, or hurt those that we love. I wanted to tell two dramatic stories of two 73-year-old men. These are both true stories, true accounts, but with very different outcomes. One very sad outcome, one a joyful outcome, to illustrate this. And the first, I'm going to start with the bad news. So start with the unhappy ending here so we can end on a joyful note. And the first story is of a man from Madison, South Dakota. His name is Carl Erickson, 73 years old. When he was in high school, he was a water boy for the football team. And in the locker room, the football players did something that made him look like a fool. He never forgot it. He was humiliated. And he never forgot the perpetrator who did it. And for 50 years, he stewed over this. He replayed it. He watched to see what happened to this man's life. And when he saw that he was successful in this way or that way, he became even angrier. Until one day, it had reached such a point that he knew in the general area where this man lived, and he went house to house asking, are you Norman Johnson? Or does Norman Johnson live here? No. Next house, until, yes, Norman lives here. I want to speak with him. Norman came and he shot him dead. And he immediately realized how this evil had overtaken him. And he later apologized to Norman's widow and his children, spending now the rest of his life in prison. But you see how he chose to be miserable for 50 years. 50 years he let this cloud hang over him. 50 years it poisoned his life. And you know, it's said, unforgiveness is the insanity of hoping for a better past. You're not going to change the past. We all did stupid things in high school. Stupid things were done to us, perhaps. So insanity is hoping for a better past. Oh, if that wouldn't have happened. If this wouldn't have happened. And we live with this dark cloud that colors the rest of our life, discolors the rest of our life. You see, that's a suffering that was chosen. Dr. Richard Fitzgibbons, psychologist who's often on EWTN, he believes that a lot of mental illnesses or mental problems people have is rooted in unforgiveness, something from the past. And sometimes, and I weep with people who really had painful childhoods, I grieve over what they suffered, and I sometimes say, I'm so sorry that that happened to you when you were a child. You never felt loved, or you felt rejected, or you were abused. Horrible things, but not beyond the reach of Jesus. Not beyond his healing touch. And sometimes a psychologist can help to get over that hump or to work through those hurts of the past. And sometimes that can be a necessary and good thing. But Jesus is the one who ultimately has to reach in and to heal the deepest part that no other person can reach. And we find that especially when we say, Lord, I forgive. Help me to forgive. And to pray for the very person who may have hurt us. So there's one illegitimate suffering. And I want to show you a very different story with a happier conclusion. And this is a true story from my own home state of Iowa. A man named Alvin Strait. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie with Richard Farnsworth called The Strait Story. It's a true story. And in fact, the actor who played Richard, who was Richard Farnsworth, was dying of bone cancer himself when this was being recorded. But Alvin was 73 years old. He was having some heart problems. The car keys had been taken away from him. And he gets word that his brother Henry, over in Wisconsin, just had a stroke. His brother Henry was older than him. And they had been estranged from each other for like 10 years. Hadn't talked to each other. Alvin lived in Lawrence, Iowa, northwestern part of Iowa. But he was determined he was going to go see his brother Henry. Didn't have any car or car keys, but he did have one means of transportation. He had a John Deere lawnmower. And so he took his John Deere lawnmower and he got this large wagon that he filled up with a cooler with hot dogs that he could eat and shelter and different things. And it took him 6 weeks at 5 miles an hour to go 240 miles across Iowa. And in eastern Iowa, there's more rolling hills, and they have this scene where the brakes burn out as he's going down this hill. But then finally he arrives at his brother Henry's house. And Henry comes out and says, "You came in that thing?" But you see, Henry had no doubt of his brother Alvin's sincerity and wanting to be reconciled. In fact, Henry moved back to that area to be with the Strait family for the rest of his years. Imagine the release in both of these men's hearts, estranged for 10 years, hadn't spoken to each other, and now they embrace, they forgive. Poison is gone. So there is one of the illegitimate sufferings we choose to suffer if we choose to be unforgiving. Another illegitimate suffering is envy. So, being more interested in the blessings of others than our own. I'm not happy with, a person may say, I'm not happy with my face or my hair or my body or my finances or whatever it is. I wish I had what he has or she has. And it gnaws at us. There's a family with 10 children that was living near the shrine. The father was, or he is, a Delta pilot. And one time I had given the mother a piece of advice that she liked so much that later when I visited their house to bless their house, I saw that she had written it in calligraphy and put it over their kitchen sink, where she probably spent a lot of time. And it was a saying from a Chicago coffee shop, and it said, as you go through life, whatever be your goal, keep your eye on the donut and not on the hole. You see, because that can be a tendency. We could say, you know, would you look at this donut? It's got a hole in it. How can I possibly enjoy this? Just look at the size of this hole. And would you look at my life? I got this going on, that going on, this trouble. How could I possibly be happy? And we focus our attention on that. And that's how you can be miserable. Focus on what's wrong with your life. What's causing you some discomfort in your life, what you don't like, and focus on that. And if you do that, you'll be miserable. We can make ourselves miserable. Instead of saying, you know, this donut, it's got a hole in it, but it's filled with jelly, it's got some sprinkles on it, you know, and it's, or my life that I have divine life at work in me. I have the spark of eternity alive in me when I was baptized. That Jesus remains with me all days until the end of the world in a very profound way in the Eucharist and all the sacraments. Every time I pray, that first of all, he created me. He brought me into existence. That he's gone to prepare a place for me. That where he is, I also may be. And if we look at that, we'll notice and see that the good far outweighs what's unhappy or what troubles us in our lives. We all have different traumas that can overwhelm us. We all have times of grief, and it takes time to work through those. But we don't grieve like those without hope, because we know the bigger picture. Jesus has revealed the bigger picture to us. So being grateful can be a way. Envy is something that is an illegitimate suffering. Looking down on having to serve. I would rather go to the finest restaurants and have the finest servants, and I want to be served. I don't want to serve. It's your turn to clean the bathroom. You know, it's your turn to do this. And when we forget what Jesus taught us before he went to his passion, he washed feet. And he said, what I've done is I've just given you an example. You call me Master and Lord, and so I am. But I've just given you an example that what I have done, you also must do. And if we forget that we are called not to be served, but to serve, to give our life. If we forget that and we complain about that and we grumble about what we've got to do, and we all do sometimes when we get tired. You know, there was a sign in a doctor's office. It said, if you're irritable, grouchy, or just plain mean, there will be a $10 charge for putting up with you, you know. So sometimes we kind of get that way. But if we forget, you know, that I'm here to serve. And as it said, where there's love, there's no labor. If we're doing it for love of the Lord, for love of my family, for love of others, the labor becomes so much lighter. But if we're complaining the whole time through, we're again making ourselves miserable and everybody else around us miserable. So there's another illegitimate suffering. Being hypersensitive. Some remark, oh, he or she has it really in for me. There was a man on a psychologist's couch. And he was saying, you know, I have all these feelings of paranoia. And the psychologist said, no, you're not paranoid. Everyone really is out to get you. You know, we can be hypersensitive. We can take things and we can try to attribute motives. He doesn't like me. She doesn't like me. He said this because they may just be having a bad day. They just may not be feeling well. And a lot of times people don't think about us at all, really. But we can have this hypersensitivity that I feel incredibly sorry for myself. Again, it's an illegitimate suffering. But now let's look at what are beautiful sufferings. Beautiful sufferings. I mentioned this past weekend, you know, you women who carry a child, carry that child for 9 months, you go through morning sickness, you have the pain of childbirth. But then there's that joy. There's a necessary connection between that suffering and the joy. And that joy is such, our Lord said, that the woman forgets that pain. It's a beautiful suffering. Alice von Hildebrand, who's, and I'm taking much of this talk from one of her talks on the meaning of suffering. She said that when you begin to love, you begin to tremble. You begin to suffer. Because a young couple, they get married, they conceive a child, and they begin to worry. So am I eating the right things? A mother worries about, are we doing the right things? We're hoping that the pregnancy will be a healthy one. Praying for that little one. Looking with hope for the day when that little one arrives. And then when that child is born, then they start sniffling maybe, or they sneeze and they wonder, is it something serious? Should we take him to the doctor? And if they're sick, they may be waiting at the bedside. They may be there. They're forgetting themselves. They're laying down their lives. It's costing them sleep and energy and time. But there's love. There's really no love where there's no sacrifice. It's like sometimes I've said to a young couple that's going to get married, imagine this young couple that I had gone through marriage preparation. I said, imagine, Teresa, if Almar had said to you, will you marry me? I will be with you as long as everything goes well. There's no troubles and you always make me happy. I said, Teresa would do well to say, get lost. There's no love there. But then if he said, will you marry me? I will lay down my life for you. I will be with you in good times and in bad, in health and in sickness, till death. And he not only says it, but he lives it out. There's love. And she's saying the same thing. There's love. There's no love where there's no sacrifice. Jesus teaches us, and his great sacrifice is also the greatest manifestation of his love. Then also, the next level of beautiful suffering in love, is to be with a person who is suffering. When a person loves another person, they want to be with them to share in their suffering. You see, that is why euthanasia is such an evil today. As a priest, I have often seen how at the end of a person's life, there's like this flowering that happens. In that person themselves, as they are dying, they often will let go of old resentments or hurts, and they'll be reconciled, and they will express their love in ways they never did before to their children or their spouse or to others. There's like this flowering that comes about in that moment. And not only in that person, but also in those around them, that they too express their love. They too, there's a reconciliation. And when I was at my godfather's or my godmother's husband's funeral, that all of the children, and I've knew them throughout my life, they all said the same thing, that it made us focus on what really matters in life. What really matters, what really lasts. Alice von Hildebrand deeply loved her husband, Dietrich, who was quite a bit older than her. And if you don't know his story, it's a remarkable one. He lived in Europe at the time as the Nazis were growing in power. And he was one of the writers against the Nazism. And because of that, he was on their hit list. He was at the top of it. And through God's grace, he remained one step ahead of them as they were pursuing him, and he eventually emigrated to the United States. And he and Alice both had a love for philosophy, and they married. And her eyes still kind of, flutter when she talks about Dietrich, because she so admired this courageous man whom she deeply loved. But being much older than her, and she's in her 90s, he died some time ago. But she talked about wanting to share in his suffering, being unhappy if the one that you love would not tell you of what they're suffering, so that you could be with them and you could share it with them. That's what the word compassion means. Come means with, passion, suffer. To suffer with. To be with someone. She said that she had met widows who seemed not all that upset that their husbands had died. I'm free. Because their marriage wasn't the happiest one. And so she says, you know, I have great grief now, but I would have it even 10 times worse than what it is now, because what that grief points to is that we had such a beautiful love and joy together. And so it's a complementary thing, that that joy necessarily means there's going to be a sorrow with that. But that sorrow only points to that joy and that love that they shared together. Then, Alice, and this is a third and final point regarding beautiful suffering. She says, but the highest level of suffering love is not only suffering with someone, but suffering for someone. The highest example of that is Jesus on the cross. He was innocent. He came for love of us, and we put him on the cross. But he laid down his life for us. There is no greater love, he said, than to lay down your life. He said it with his words, and then he did it with his example. Perhaps you've heard of the story of Elizabeth Lisieux. And she was a woman who had married a man who bought into an atheist mentality at the time. And so she abandoned her Catholic faith for a time, but then she found it too dissatisfying, and the reasons of those with the atheist mentality didn't really add up. So she returned and became an even more fervent Catholic. Her husband remained a staunch in his atheism. And there came a moment when she offered her life to God for him. She was diagnosed with cancer, and she suffered, and she died. Later, he's reading her memoirs, and he sees that she made this offering for him and for his soul. And she even predicted that he would become a priest. Something that happened. He became a Dominican priest. And he went around telling this story of his own wife. Her cause has been introduced, her cause for canonization, Elizabeth Lisieux. There's a book with her memoirs in it. So you see, whereas in the world that we live in today, there's often always a negative connotation with suffering. And yet for the Christian, we can say that suffering has a meaning because his death was not meaningless. And my suffering, your suffering, is not meaningless. And somehow, God uses it for our spiritual welfare, for our eternal good. You know, sometimes it happens, especially in a tragic event, that people get angry at God, or they just stop believing in God because this terrible thing happened. And that can be somewhat understandable. Even Pope John Paul II referred to that in his letter on the meaning of suffering. He said that people will say, why? And God expects that question. And sometimes it's hard to understand, why does a child get cancer? I want to tell you a story that helps to illustrate something of that, how we must always look at everything from the eternal perspective. What does this have to do with eternity? Again, this is a true story. Some years ago, I was sent an article from the Denver Catholic newspaper. And the story was about a man named Robbie, or a young boy, actually named Robbie Ferrofino. Robbie Ferrofino, he and his dad lived in Denver, and his dad had a furniture store. They loved following the Denver Broncos, and the Broncos were doing great. They were having a great season. But Robbie was diagnosed with cancer. And his dad was troubled by that. Why would God allow this? And he stopped practicing his faith. He was either angry at God or he just lost faith that God existed. If this is what happened to his boy that he dearly loved. But Robbie was known as a boy with a golden heart. And it was because when Robbie would be in the hospital, his dad would bring him some pizza maybe that day, and Robbie would go down the hall and he'd share it with the other kids. And one day his dad went on a business trip to California and he stopped by Disneyland and he bought this big Mickey Mouse, stuffed Mickey Mouse. And so he brings it to the hospital, gives it to Robbie. He leaves the room for a little while, comes back, and the Mickey Mouse is gone. I said, "Robbie, what'd you do with that? I went to a lot of trouble to get that for you." He said, "Dad, come on, I'll show you." And he took him by the hand, and he led him down the hallway. And here was a little boy sleeping with Mickey Mouse. He said, "Dad, I had so many toys, and he didn't have any. So I gave him Mickey Mouse." It was later that Mother Teresa was coming to Denver, and they let her know about Robbie and his cancer. And they asked if she would pray with Robbie. And so she agreed to it. And for some reason, it took place on the tarmac of the airport. So Robbie was led up the steps into the airplane. And he came off. And Mother Teresa was following him. And she was crying. And so when Robbie got back to his parents, they said, "What'd you do to make Mother Teresa cry?" He said, "I didn't do nothing." But later they found out that Mother Teresa said, "Robbie, I understand that you have cancer. Would you like me to pray with you?" He said, "That's okay. I'd like you to pray for my friends instead." And he named some of his friends. And Mother Teresa was so moved by this young boy's selflessness that it brought her to tears. She had rarely seen this in adults. And here's a 10-year-old. Robbie eventually died. And his dad called the furniture store workers and he said, "Don't call me today, my son died, unless it's really an emergency." Well, they called at the end of the day. And they said, "You're going to have to come down. We can't set the alarm. There's a white dove keeps flying around in here, and we can't catch it. Keeps landing on the cash register where Robbie worked." So he goes down, and immediately that dove flew to him. And he had this peace that came over him. He brought the dove home, and on the day of Robbie's funeral, he released it. He said it just went higher and higher, and it disappeared. And that night he had a dream that he and Robbie were walking and they came to this stream and the dad couldn't go through that stream, but Robbie was able to go through it. And on the other side were people cheering and welcoming him. He said, "Goodbye, Dad." And his dad understood. He understood that he needed to look at things from the eternal perspective. And he came back to the faith. That's the truth. That's why we have hope. That's why. even if we lose everything, we still have hope. Because the end of the story is glory.
Thank you for listening to this special presentation by WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio. To financially support the mission of WSFI, mail your tax-deductible donation to P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois, 60048. That's P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois, 60048. Or you may also donate online at wsfiradio.org.